Welcome to our Saturday simulcast, joined by Tom Dienhart, Brian Newbert, and or Ty Webb, whatever term you want to use for Brian's name. But I want to thank you for watching and listening to this, and thank the Union Club Hotel, 811 Bistro, Boiler Up Bar, and all that the Union Club does to support our show, and goldenblack.com. It's been a week of, as when a season comes in with men's basketball, always talk about what may be next. Brian's written a lot about that from a transfer portal standpoint to Isaiah Thompson entering the transfer portal. And Brian, I guess we're looking ahead now. There's going to be some action, certainly, and that's going to be on a national level. Every school is going through some of this, and one would think that Purdue, though they didn't take a transfer last year, that it's pretty likely that the Boilermakers will this year. What's your take right now? And I know this is not necessarily a situation that's going to be watched minute by minute, but at some point, some of these things are going to come to fruition.
Yeah, Purdue's got to recruit a couple important players next year, to the point where not only does Purdue have to delve into the portal this year, but it has to do so in a manner that will impact next year's team pretty significantly. You have got to get another ball handling guard. You have got to get another scorer, a backcourt scorer. Non-negotiables. You have to have those things. If those two things are the same guy, great. If not, two different guys, fine. But I think at this point, you're looking at least a two-man transfer class. I'd have a hard time seeing them bring in three, but you might have the scholarship capital to even potentially be able to do that. So it is non-negotiable, and it will have a direct impact on, you know, how good Purdue is next season, because these are significant critical needs for Purdue here.
Yeah. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, Brian, you know, you've already talked about Nigel Pack and what a desirable prospect he's going to be. I read some things, Brian, where they think he's the most desired guy in the portal right now. And you've written that he's going to be hard to reel in. Purdue obviously has a lot of connections to the Indianapolis native. You know, just sort of talk about if somehow Purdue landed him, what he would mean to the program, the skill set he brings to. And also, Brian, there's also a lot of speculation about Robert Fennessy, of course, too. We're all well-versed with his background. And if he really is a guy that Purdue would be interested in, if that's a guy that could end up landing in West Lafayette.
Yeah, I'll start with Nigel Pack. He's the classic example of a guy who everyone kind of thumbed their nose up at. Wait, thumbed their nose up? That doesn't make any sense, because he would have to do this.
No, I think it's
okay. No. Stuck their nose up at, because complete mess right now.
I know he's only about 6 feet tall. He's not the biggest kid.
Yeah, no, he's the classic example of a kid that a lot of people, I think, wrote off in high school because he's small. Purdue didn't. Purdue very seriously recruited him. But I think ultimately, at the end of the day, when you're about to get Jaden Ivey and Ethan Morton, and you had just signed Isaiah Thompson in the class before, you don't want to get too prohibitively small in your backcourt. So I think size did matter in terms of Purdue never ultimately offering him. But I think they loved him as a player. And I think under a lot of different circumstances, they would have taken him. But everybody else is going to recruit him now. And those are all the people who wouldn't have even given him a second thought in high school. But now that the kid has gone somewhere and proven himself, all of a sudden he's Russell Westbrook and gets recruited accordingly. He's a really good player, obviously averaged 17 and a half points a game at Kansas State this year in the Big 12. Big time shooter, guy who can score, guy who can lead a team. I always really liked him in high school. I always really liked him in AU. I saw him a ton because he was playing with Jaden Ivey and Caleb First. Just a really good player. And I think he would, I don't know if he's transformative, but I think he is as good as it gets in terms of both of your needs right now. Having a guy who can have the ball in his hands, who can initiate offense, but also who can score and shoot. One thing about next year's team too for Purdue is that you got to keep the shooting thing going. Obviously, Fletcher Lawyer comes in as a big-time shooter, but losing Sasha Stefanovic, losing Isaiah Thompson. Who am I forgetting here?
You're losing Eric Hunter
losing the way Eric Hunter shot in the second half of the year. that's a lot of stuff to lose. And Purdue has to make sure that it's still a good enough shooting team to be able to, assuming Zach Edey's back, to spread the floor, all of that stuff. So having a guy who can be a big time shooter, I think would be a really big deal too, obviously. I don't really have to tell anybody that, but, and then the Robert Phinisee part of it, I think Purdue's recruiting a lot of guys. Mm-hmm. I think Phinisee has been interested in finishing up at Purdue. What exactly the draw is there when he didn't want to come to Purdue out of high school, had every opportunity to, and had basically blew off every opportunity waiting on Indiana to decide whether it actually wanted him or not, which is exactly what happened because Archie Miller's opinion changed every day on whether or not he was good enough to play there. We'll see. I think at the end of the day, if you take Robert Phinisee, you have to take him alongside a guy like Pack. It has to be a guy who can score. You have to be able to take Phinisee as an intangibles guy, a defensive guy, a guy who's not going to turn the ball over, you know, things like that. Just kind of like a solid sort of point guard. The other guy needs to be able to do a little bit more. But I think if you take him as the second transfer in your class, that would be palatable. Now, at the end of the day, too, and I keep saying that. I don't know why I keep saying at the end of the day. But Painter's got to decide, what he really wants here. I think Robert Phinisee at the end of the – when all is said and done. When all is said and done, would have to decide, hey, do I really want to do this? You know, do I really want to, spend my whole career at Indiana and then all of a sudden be that guy that, all of a sudden everybody turns on? I mean, there's something to be said for these guys in college, too, for having alumni on their side, and having a school at their backs.
I couldn't agree more. I mean,
I'm not trying to talk Rob Phinisee out of it if he wants to come to Purdue. I'm just being an objective observer here. And that's what Matt Painter always says all the time about transfers, is that who have you been loyal to? Who is going to be there for you 20 years from now? Do you really want to be the guy who crosses the Purdue-Indiana basketball rivalry? I don't know, but that's something, a decision he'd have to make after Purdue makes a decision whether or not it's going to go 2 feet in on him. As of right now, it has not. They're talking to him. Matt Painter has been very complimentary of him over the years in a public, non-tampering manner. It's a possibility. I don't know if I'd call it a likelihood, but I know Phinisee would be very interested if Purdue offered him a scholarship.
Yeah, and I think a situation, and I agree with you, I just think some of these guys at times, and I understand the ability to want to go someplace or graduate and move on and maybe a little bit of a different situation, but, just to leave and throw away your, and not throw away, but at least taint your, if you go from Purdue to Indiana or Indiana to Purdue or Purdue to Indiana, it's different than football. I know Purdue's got a couple guys in football, but it's in basketball. I just think it's a tough thing to ever. But network is everything for these guys, and that's what they don't realize.
Football players are faceless. What? Football players are faceless.
Correct.
I mean,
that's why I'm saying it's not the same.
They are one out of 100 guys. You aren't going to see the next time Purdue plays at Bloomington, hey, DeMarge Lewis, you suck. because half
you might with Samson James if he runs for 200 yards. I know it did.
Because half of the people in Memorial Stadium aren't even going to remember DeMarge Lewis was, played for Indiana. They might remember Samson James, obviously, because he's a running back and he was a very highly touted recruit, but it's not even going to be remotely the same sort of reaction.
No, I agree. I'm just saying, I don't understand why guys, but again, it's a function of age and availability. I don't know Phinisee's graduated also from IU. I'm not sure. So that is a possibility as well. Tom, the transfer portal on the football side is also an interesting, because you've written a lot about, offensive linemen and where Purdue may be going. But it's a broad stroke, too. It's this recruiting thing that has to happen where you just never – it's just proof. And maybe this is going to be a strength of Matt Painter, maybe a strength of Jeff Brom. You're just never going to stop recruiting guys. You've got to, you never know when you're going to got somebody that may turn around and want to come to your school. And Jeff Brom's trying to bolster a number of different positions potentially, and we don't know how all it's going to shake out. But it's just it's the interesting world you've talked about, written about that. It is the fascinating part. It is the new recruiting. It is some things that can keep readers and fans' attention as we move into the off season. And Purdue has done a really good job in football of making some positive moves there.
Yeah, you always got to be open for business. You've always got to be shopping. And believe me, Purdue's got, like every other school, Purdue's got people that monitor that portal every day, every hour. Because guys, as you know, if you follow this at all, even with a casual interest, you know guys are jumping in this portal every day. And once spring football ends across the country here for most of the schools in mid to late April, you know, everybody at Purdue expects obviously more players across the nation to jump into the portal. A lot of guys will have a real sense of where they stand going in the fall. Maybe they don't like their status, and they may start searching for new homes. So, again, Purdue expects a surge and more shopping items to peruse the aisles, if you will, once spring ball ends for all these schools across the nation. Like you said, Alan, if you had to pick two priority positions, we all know we talked about this every week for a month, it seems like, but the offensive line and running back, obviously, are areas Purdue wants to enhance. They've got offers out to guys. A couple offensive linemen looks like they may have a good chance to get. Running back may be a to-be-determined deal. And you know, remember this too, you know, Purdue and under Jeff Brohm's added guys as late as May. So there's no real sense of urgency here. They're not going to panic buy. And they know the doors to this shop aren't closing in 2 weeks. So, again, they're always going to be looking, and they're going to be selective. They're not going to take a guy just to take a guy. They've got contingency plans. And put it this way, Brohm's been at this job for 5 years, and I think at this point you kind of got to give him the benefit of the doubt that he's going to figure something out one way or other to keep this offense moving.
I think they actually added Samson James in August, didn't they?
Yeah, that was
he couldn't, that's why he couldn't play.
Yeah, but they were hoping he could. It's possible nowadays with all that's going on. Who knows? You could add somebody like the day before the first game.
They got Brock Thompson last May.
Yeah.
And then there's one other guy cited and boiling over that they got kind of late in the process. I think it was Dave Steinmetz.
Yeah.
He was a guy they got in May as well. So, again, so there's that. And, again, that staff's going to be willing to take a player pretty much any position aside from maybe quarterback that they think can help their team right now. You always want to, of course, augment your roster. So, yeah, that's the transfer portal wheels continue to spin there for the Boilermakers. You know, Pro Day was this last week. 9 Boilermakers worked out for scouts from 30 NFL teams. I think Xander Horvath won the day. George Karloftis looked very good. I think he solidified his standing as a mid to a late first round pick. You know, I thought Jackson Anto did pretty well. He's always going to be a long shot underdog kind of a guy. It's going to be a fun story to try to watch unfold here. And, you know, David Bell, guys, you know, he's a story upon himself, right? We all know he didn't do that well at the combine in March in Indianapolis. He didn't fare much better on Pro Day on Tuesday. He's just not a guy that's going to test well. You know, he's not an explosive athlete. And you're going to have to rely on the game film there. The intangibles, the ability to catch the ball, run routes. He's tough. He's smart. He could end up being a fourth or a fifth round pick. Mm-hmm. And maybe a third or fourth receiver for a team, a tough slot receiver. I think there's a place in the NFL for David Bell. But he's going to be a guy maybe of all the Boilermakers, he's going to be the one guy, at least I'll speak to myself personally, that has maybe the most intrigue when we get to that draft here in late April.
Yeah. I mean,
somebody would
right.
be making a mistake if they let him fall to the fifth round.
Oh, gosh. I mean,
because one thing the NFL, I mean, and I understand it, is the one thing you got to start somewhere and you got to do the measurables thing, but they so often overlook productivity. And guys who just kind of find a way. I mean, the NFL, it's all over the place. There are guys who were, you know, not exactly the prototype coming out of college. The quarterback position alone is, mm-hmm. there's just all these random dudes, you know? And they get so hung up on going and getting that 6'5 dude with the laser rocket arm, you know, and then they overlook, you know, the 6'1" guy who's just a freaking winner. And it happens at wide receiver too. And somebody would be making an enormous mistake if he doesn't, if he gets past the late second, third round to me. But what do I know?
It's a deep receiving group this year, guys. Yeah, I think there's 10 guys that could go the first couple, two or three rounds. So maybe somebody falls in love with David Bell. In the end, it doesn't really matter where you get drafted, right? It's kind of nice for your ego, and I guess your signing bonus money is impacted as well. But you just want that opportunity, and he's going to get on a roster, we know that. And he can make his money with his second contract. He's again, a guy that's going to have to get into a camp and is going to have to be there and impress people with his on-field skills. And I think we all feel confident when he gets that opportunity, he's going to excel. And Xander Horvath, guys, I tell you what, between him and DeMarcus Mitchell, you want to talk about comic book superhero bodies. Horvath tests well too, guys, about a 4.57 40, runs faster than Jackson Anthrop and Dedrick Mackey. He's 6'3", weighs 230 pounds, bench press 31 reps at 225. You name it, Horvath is just a freak. He's a better athlete than you think, too. You guys remember when he would leap over defenders. And he's a guy that's more than a fullback, I think. He could play some running back. Probably never going to be a prominent player in the NFL, but you got to think he's the kind of guy you would want on your 45-man roster, because he could play fullback, could play some running back. You can split him out and he can catch passes. And of course, he can help on special teams too.
Yeah, another
one. Special teams is his ticket.
Yeah.
Getting on a roster as a special teamer, and maybe a third down type of back who can go in there and
catch passes
is he's got a chance.
He's got to get out of the flat, but he's an effort guy. But boy, that David Bell, I don't know. And again, I probably have Purdue blinders on, or just because we've seen him so much and seen what he could do. But I would agree that you let him go. I can't imagine. I'd be surprised at a scenario where he is I'm not saying he's the next Jerry Rice. I'm not saying that, but I would be surprised at a scenario where he doesn't make some level of an impact in the NFL at some point.
I've seen it comparable to Anquan Boldin, Jarvis Landry. Yeah. Guys that just get open and make plays, right, and catch the ball. And, again, I'm like you. I think sometimes these measurable things get way overrated. And, again, we've seen countless guys that have outperformed their measurables, and David Bell certainly looks like he could be one of those guys.
Yeah. One of the feel-good stories, and you kind of hinted on that, is just that – not I don't feel good, but he's also going to be the focal point of Purdue's football team in 2022 is Aiden O'Connell. You watched him whip it around a little bit and throwing passes on in front of scouts. Just to talk about what the potential for him is. You know, we're hearing people talking to, you know, he is a second team All Big Ten guy, has a chance to make first team All Big Ten. And he's a former walk-on and a great individual. a lot of hype. I don't want to say hype, but he's a guy that could get some national conversation this year, maybe because he's going to throw for a ton of yards, assuming he stays healthy.
How can you not love Aiden O'Connell, right? He's every bit of 6'3". And this is the third year in a row he's been the quarterback of Pro Day. Of course, last year there was a bit of a kerfuffle, if you want to call it that, when Rondell Moore requested Aiden O'Connell over Jack Plummer. And that sort of gave you a hint. And again, talking to Jackson Anthrop after Pro Day, he just gushed about the way Aiden puts the ball right on the mark. And uncanny accuracy, we saw that last year, right? Calm in the pocket. And he's a guy that's not afraid to take a chance to in game situations. He's going to throw some picks, but he has no hesitancy trying to thread the needle and get a pass in there. Sometimes to his detriment, we see that every once in a while, but still stands tall in the pocket. He's smart and a respected leader. And like you said, Alan, he's going to throw for a ton of yards this year. This offense has questions, but like I said, you have a quarterback like Aiden O'Connell. He's going to elevate everybody and make them better. I mean, look at the receivers Drew Brees worked with at Purdue.
Yeah.
He made Isaac Jones and Chris Daniels and guys like that better, who really are kind of pedestrian players. And And I think Aiden O'Connell is that kind of guy too, even without a David Bell, maybe a Milton Wright. So it's going to be fun watching him, guys. Every time they step on the field, you got to think Purdue's going to feel that they really have a shot to win a game. You have a quarterback like AOC. And I will say this, you're going to see C.J. Stroud get all the preseason Big Ten quarterback accolades, right? O'Connell's still going to be there, and he's going to have something to prove. And it's going to be really fascinating to see what we're talking about this time next year with Aiden O'Connell and his NFL ability.
Yeah, they were talking about C.J. Stroud, at least in Ohio State's pro day, being a, you know, they were ready to draft him right there. And,
yeah.
And I get that. You know, and O'Connell, like you said, yes, he did throw some picks, but he also has the longest streak in the history of Purdue football without throwing an interception last year.
Right.
Unbelievable streak that he went through prior to the game in Nashville. So it's been an amazing thing to watch from that standpoint. All right, now we're all on bated breath for, because we will probably do our show next week after the spring game. But I know Brian's been through literally dozens of Purdue spring games over the year. I'll start with you, Brian. I know Tom as well.
Great moments. Brian can give us his great moments in Purdue spring football history.
Who is his favorite player in spring football game history? But no, in terms of, even you've obviously been busy with basketball, but just as you watch that, what do you watch for anymore in this game? Of course, Purdue's got so many guys that have been on the shelf, but you watch Aiden O'Connell throw the ball around, see how sharp he is. Is it Brady Allen you're watching? What are you watching for from your perspective? And I'll start with Brian and go back to Tom.
Yeah, I should probably let you guys know I'm not going because I have a basketball I have a basketball tournament in Indy next weekend to go to. But if I were going.
Yeah, if you were going.
Probably the only thing I would look for is the injury report at the end of the thing. Because it sounds to me like there's so many guys out and all this stuff that it's just total warp reality. And that's the case every year, but it just seems to me like it's more of the case, as much of the case as ever this year. And it's just not, it just doesn't scale to what, you know, might be expected to happen in the fall. I think the more experience and the more reps you get, all of those transfers, I think, is a big deal. So if, you know, somebody gets a chance to be like a starter who wouldn't ordinarily be a starter, I don't even know who that player would be. Bryce Hampton, is he even healthy? I don't know.
Yeah, he's healthy.
Okay. What about those wide receivers? Are they healthy?
They got four top guys are probably out. But the Tywin Tracy is healthy, Brian, so he will play.
Well,
and I'm looking forward to watching him.
The more you can get him running your plays in an actual semi-game environment, good. But I would probably give Aiden O'Connell a quarter and get him back in his jar of formaldehyde here, because he is your season. He is your season next year. It's just – I doubt they make the quarterbacks live anyway, so he's not going to get hit.
Yeah.
But funny things happen. I would just get him the hell out of there as soon as he's done for the day.
Yeah, you're right, Brian.
I'm going to interject that. I mean, this, I agree that Michael, I'm because I haven't been at spring practice. I'm interested in watching Brady Allen too, and Alamo throw it around just to see where they are and what's going to happen, because that's a storyline. Again, I know they won't be live, and who they're going to be throwing to will be interesting. Tyron Chase, you've written about him.
Yeah.
A lot, and he looks the part, and that will be interesting to watch too.
Yeah, they're gonna have him try to come fall, I should say. And they're gonna try to utilize him as much as they can, carrying the ball too. So I think it's going to be a lot of eyes on number three, Tyron Tracy, guys. And maybe you talked about Brady Allen and Michael Lamo. Also, Austin Burton, you're really looking to manufacture drama. You always have the number two quarterback spot, right? Offensive line, too. And, again, to give you an idea, Brian talked about warp reality. At Monday's practice, they had the backup quarterbacks actually working out with the cornerbacks. They had so few cornerbacks available. They had Bryce Hampton and Reese Taylor.
Yeah.
And they had, you know, Christian Gelov and Kyle Adams working out with the cornerbacks and working 11-on-11. So gives you an idea of the attrition they've had in the secondary, especially at cornerback. So Brian talked about just get everybody through this thing healthy. And yeah, there's going to be some guys you're going to want to watch, like the Tracys and Brady Allens and Scotty Humpich, you know, Reese Taylor, those type guys. But I can't imagine there's a lot of enthusiasm from the coaching staff to do this, but they have a TV show to put on, of course, on BTN at noon. It's going to kick off. So, and also, guys, they're going to have the banquet on Friday.
The 100th Kiwanis banquet, by the way.
Kiwanis, yeah, 100. So, and you know what? Before we go, I guess there's one more quick question I got for Brian.
Yes, sir.
Can you kind of give us a sense of what you think Brandon Newman's going to do? And if they don't get Nigel Pack, if you had to pick a checklist, I don't get Pack. Who's number two? Who's number three? Who's number four on your wish list to add among that the portal guys who could be a scorer and a ball handler for Purdue?
I personally think that Newman's coming back, and I think that's a very good thing for him because I think that, well, I can't predict the future. So I can't say it's a good thing for him until we see how he fares next season. But I think that, you know, Matt Painter met with him late in the season and said, hey, look at what we're losing next year. See all those shots that are walking out the door. See all those minutes that are walking out the door. We just need you to fill some of that. And Painter's been pretty steadfast in, hey, Newman is better as a starter than he is as a backup. He is better in extended minutes as he is shortened minutes. And when I say extended minutes, I mean like 25. So the, you know, the people who would say we'll play him eight instead of four, you know, that's not the point. So I think there are reasonable scenarios here, and he seems like he's been self-aware enough here the last few months to understand why he wasn't playing and understand the changes he has to make in terms of his, I guess, his focus defensively, his attention to detail from an offensive perspective, kind of things like that. I think that there's reasonable scenarios here where this guy goes from like not playing to being one of your like three or four top scorers. I mean, I don't want to, this could go the other way. But I think he understands the opportunity ahead, and I think he is going to work like crazy to take advantage of it. As far as Nigel Pack goes, I've got four names right now that they're recruiting, and there could be like 50. If they don't get Nigel Pack, I know they're recruiting the Dylan Penn kid from Bellarmine. I know Bellarmine. Yeah. I struggled with that all year long.
Bellarmine, I think, is it's like Louisville, I think. With
No. It is Louisville. I had a friend who's from Louisville.
Back I know, they all tell
and
you
he
that.
Would get so mad when I would say Louisville. And we should ask the Bronx.
Oh, it's Louisville. But,
Louisville.
But it is, but it's nuts. But go ahead. That's another thing.
Who are you to judge?
I can sit in judgment all day long. It's a podcast, for God's sake. Go ahead.
So it would be Dylan Penn and Tyreek Key from Indiana State would be another one. I have no idea what's going on with either of those two guys. But as I said before, that, you know, this is at least a two transfer class now, probably.
What about the guy from Princeton?
Yeah, I haven't gotten a great vibe there. I know Purdue talked to him, but I don't know if, that's one they're going to be 2 feet in on. They might be. I don't know. It's covering the transfer portal. Yeah. It is the worst thing in the history of journalism.
Mass recruitment.
I hate calling what we do journalism because we're not covering the White House. We're not covering, you know, whatever.
It's sports.
We're not covering. It's just sports. Yeah. But insofar as what we do, covering the transfer portal is horrible. Yeah. Horrible. Because unless you have an in on a kid, which I'm fortunate on the most important kid this year, I might, it is really hard to get good information on this stuff. So I'm not really sure about Jalen Llewellyn in terms of whether or not Purdue's, you know, targeting him per se, or he's just one of the names on their list that they're kind of keeping on the line.
Gotcha.
So, in a roundabout kind of way, you know, it's a little bit advantageous for Purdue to have gotten back in this as quickly as they did, you know, because what's unfortunate in the portal era here in basketball, at least, is the longer you play, the farther behind you get, because all this stuff is going to be happening now. And that's not, I'm not in any way, shape, or form saying that Purdue would rather be sitting home recruiting transfers than, you know, playing in the Final Four this weekend. But the people playing in the Final Four right now are doing this in their spare time. And what they're not doing is they're not watching film on these guys. And they're not, you know, they're only doing the cursory stuff, the really superficial stuff. So Purdue has to really decide who they want. Nigel Pack is obvious. But they have to make some calls here on who they're really, 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 really going to recruit, because you can't, you can't assume Nigel Pack is in the bag, no pun intended. Because he's going to get recruited by every school in the country, because he's that productive a player. And transfers were over-recruited before the one-year waiver, and now they're going to be super over-recruited. He will be recruited by every school in the country. 99% of them would have looked at him in high school and said, yeah, we're good. But you got to get a bunch of dudes here. You have – for two scholarships, I would have to think you have to have, you know, 6-7 guys on the line here. And I already outlined at least 5, so they probably do.
Last question, Brian.
I'm putting Tom to sleep. Look at this.
No, last question.
I just talked too much.
I was going to give you my. I was going to give you my championship game prediction and my champion.
All right. Well, we try to keep this under 30 minutes so we don't put people to sleep. But one last question. I know you kind of answered this, Brian, and then we'll allow you to pick your national champion this week in men's basketball. But did Isaiah Thompson's move surprise you?
Nothing surprises me anymore, but not really, because I figured a fresh start could do him good. I mean, I thought his confidence wasn't where it needed to be during the second half of the season. The funny thing about Purdue's season is when Eric Hunter came off the bench half the season, he wasn't very good. When Isaiah Thompson came off the bench the second half of the season, he by and large wasn't very good. What that had to do with things, I don't know, but I think a fresh start, you know, when a kid deletes his Twitter, you know, I think it probably tells you what you need to know about how they're being interacted with. It's kind of the world we live in now.
Hey, Brian, where do you think he lands? What type of school?
Well, Butler's about to have a new coach who might need some players. I could see that happening. I could see Ball State with a new coach who's probably going to need some players. I could see don't underestimate the power of shot making. And, you know, this was a guy who I thought he played a really important role in Purdue being number one in the country, because putting a 50% shooter next to Jaden Ivey and next to Trayvon Williams early in the season really sort of completed Purdue. Could Purdue have used a little bit more dynamic play there? Yeah, probably. Could they have used a little bit of a better defender there? Yeah, probably. But I don't think Purdue gets number one in the country without Isaiah Thompson. I mean, this is a guy who's done positive things before, contrary to what people cannibalizing him will want to admit. I could see him going to a really good mid-major. I could see him going to a Butler, and I could see him having a couple of good years, assuming I don't know if he's going to play his COVID year. I think the distinction between a COVID year and a final year of eligibility is getting blurred now, to the point where we're not even differentiating between the two, which is so unfortunate, because I think the COVID year is crap, as you all know. But
I saw you crack about Aaron Wheeler on Twitter.
Yeah, that wasn't a crack about Aaron Wheeler. That was That was a crack about John Rothstein not even differentiating between Aaron Wheeler's COVID year and the end of his eligibility. He's been in college for 5 years. We're not even drawing a distinction anymore between your fifth year in college and this extra year that you would be postponing your life to play one more year of college basketball. It's this whole thing has gotten completely warped. There is a difference between a COVID year and there is a difference between someone's final year of eligibility. Maybe I'm being stupid about this, but it wasn't about Aaron Wheeler.
You're pretty fired up about it.
I agree, though. I'll get back to the old man in me and say that, you know, if he can do something academically and do, it is nuts, though.
That was the weirdest day of my Twitter career. Like, I posted something criticizing a media member, and Aaron Wheeler's family came after me. And I wonder if Aaron Wheeler, who is a spectacular teammate, a wonderful person, and just a really good dude, was rooting against his former teammates and friends as hard as his family apparently was. That's the question I'd wonder about. My guess is no, because Aaron Wheeler is an absolutely wonderful human being.
Yeah, he was. And that was my comment about Isaiah Thompson too. What a great kid, great family, and he's the kind of guy. All you're going to do, and ask Iowa, at least the game at Iowa. He played big, so he can make
Villanova shots. 4 of 5 from three, by the way.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I said. Like, I don't think Purdue gets to be number one in the country without Isaiah Thompson, because
he made a lot of shots
early in the season. And he was the starting point guard on a team that got to number one in the country. And Eric Hunter wasn't playing well, to start the season coming off the bench. And, you know, I think people revise history a little bit in terms of
absolutely
what a player actually did as opposed to what they were at the end of the season.
Yeah, and he actually came. I know he didn't play long against St. Peter's, did, and I know he'd been struggling, came in, made a three, and did what he was supposed to do. All right, you got 30 seconds here. Your national champion is, I know Purdue fans are disappointed that Purdue's not in New Orleans, but it is an intriguing Final Four. But all right, Tom, I'll start with you. Who do you have?
We spoke 30 minutes. We didn't talk about Jaden Ivey turning pro.
Yeah. That was because that's the biggest foregone conclusion of all time.
Yeah.
I know. I'm just kidding. I'm going Kansas Duke. I think Kansas is going to beat Duke and spoil Krzyzewski's little party. What do you guys think?
North Carolina.
Woo, how about that?
What
do you got, Alan?
I got Duke. I just think he's found a way to get, I don't know. I agree. Carolina's hot, and they obviously have the formula based on the last game at Cameron Indoor Stadium for Mike Krzyzewski. But
I'm pulling for North Carolina to beat Duke. I just think Duke's going to beat them.
And you know what? The team that might do it is Villanova, because they shoot free throws and don't beat themselves. And who knows? It's going to be interesting from that standpoint.
Big injury there, though.
Yeah.
I think that if Duke wins a national title, that is all the proof we need that the Matrix is scripted.
Yeah. And you're right. The big injury for Villanova is a rough road. All right. We're going to put this to an end. We will have next week's show. I don't know when we'll record. Brian's going to be gone Saturday. We may do it on Sunday after the spring game as well. We'll do that too. So I want to thank the Union Club Hotel for its sponsorship, the 811 Bistro Boiler Up Bar. We appreciate all that they do. And Brian and Tom, appreciate your time today. And we'll look forward to next week, our Saturday simulcast. And a lot on the site this week as we prepare for that compelling spring game, and much more with that. So have a great week, everybody. Thanks for watching and listening, and or listening, or doing both. And multitasking. We appreciate you very much. Thanks.